You're tuned to Perspectives, a weekly public affairs show which airs every Saturday right here on KTEP. And we are speaking now with Norman Hathaway. And Norman is the co-author of the book Dorothy and Otis. And we're going to talk about that in just a minute. But let's talk a little bit about Norman. First of all, Norman is an art director and a design historian focusing on underappreciated design personalities and techniques. He's the author of Overspray, Riding High with the Kings of California, Airbrush Arts, and co-author of Electrical Banana, Masters of Psychedelic Art, and has led initiatives for the Outsider Arts Fair, New York and Paris events, London's Design Museum, the Royal Academy of Arts, and artists including Paul McCartney. He has also taught and lectured widely on the history of design and typography. And the co-author is Dan Nadell. Dan is a writer and editor for visual culture publications and an art curator. He is also the author of Art Out of Time, Unknown Comic Visionaries, Art in the Unknown, Comic Book Adventures, and they are the co-authors of this book, Dorothy and Otis. Norman, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
Now, this book is incredible. For people who have not seen it yet at the store, they need to go out and get this book after we finish discussing this book. It's an incredible book, but I just mentioned Dorothy and Otis, and I didn't say who Dorothy and Otis are or were, and people in the advertising industry would certainly know who they are. Would you kind of fill us in on that?
Sure, and actually a lot of people even in the design industry know some of the work, but they don't know who they are. They're very much forgotten by history, which is one of the main impetuses we had to make this book. But at their time, particularly like in the late 20s and the 30s, and even on afterwards, but particularly in the 20s and 30s, they were thought of as at the top of their fields, particularly Otis. And they initially worked in the field of outdoor advertising, otherwise known as billboards, which at that time was kind of the prestige job to have because it was one of the few professional art jobs, you know, it's from being a fine artist that you could have because it actually printed things in color. Most magazines and things like that in those days were still, you know, just getting off the ground and still printing in black and white. So that was a great profession they had, and Otis was the head of Foster and Kreiser as the art director and designer, and then he went on from there doing freelance work directly for clients, and they Otis was hired to lead the art department and be the creative director for Wrigley, doing all the Wrigley's gum advertising and creating the Double Mint Twins and working for them for decades. And as well as working for Wrigley's, he did all the scorecards and advertising and uniform design for the Chicago Cubs baseball team. And they also were civic planners, environmental designers, and producers of some great work for the rehabilitation of Catalina Island. And all this just in a matter of decades. But that's very, very unusual. Barely anyone knew what even the term graphic design was back in those days. So to have such a varied career is unusual, and to work in so many different mediums is really crazy.
Otis came from, I don't want to say rough, but...
It was rough.
Rough background in Kansas, and he left home at the age of 12, which is incredible. Especially for, you know, that time. And then Dorothy was from a wealthy family, correct?
I wouldn't say wealthy, but definitely more. I mean, her father was a professor at a college, so, I mean, they were fine. I don't think they were super well-to-do, but a more educated background, absolutely. And, you know, Dorothy was like an excellent student and graduated, you know, the head of her class early from high school and as well at the art school she attended afterwards. So it's a very different upbringing than Otis's, absolutely.
Now, they met in the 1920s, and what some reviewers and some of the people who have talked about Dorothy and Otis term them as bohemian.
Mm-hmm.
Would you mind sharing that with us?
I would say that I would consider Dorothy a little bit more of a bohemian. And I think Otis had a kind of a wilder, younger lifestyle, a little bit more of a raconteur, and, you know, was a theater actor for a while. But Dorothy was definitely more of an intellectual and a bohemian and very modern thinker. As very unusual to be a woman in that profession at that time, and she had, you know, no compunction about asserting herself and her talent. And so, in that way, she didn't necessarily subscribe to, you know, the traditional roles meant for women at that time, and, you know, followed her own vision. So in that way, I would say she was a bohemian. And, you know, it's also very interested in the new art movements that were going on in music and dance and the arts as well, and was very good friends with a lot of, like, modernist designers from Europe.
We're visiting with Norman Hathaway. Norman is co-author of Dorothy and Otis, Designing the American Dream. Dorothy and Otis is a coffee table-sized book. It's a huge book, beautiful book, a lot of great pictures in there. And that must have been kind of difficult, Norman, as far as deciding what pictures you put in there, especially when you're talking about the ads for Wrigley's gum.
Really, it's a funny story about that. After I've done several books, I really don't even think about that anymore.
Okay.
I try and break down a table of contents when we start to create a book, and so at least I know that we're covering the specific areas, and then I just try and flow everything in that I think is important, and then once I've done that, then I start actually counting the pages and seeing what's in and what's out. So sometimes you'll place some things in that you think are just fantastic, but maybe you've already covered it a little bit, so there's no reason for duplication. But you're absolutely right that particularly with the Wrigley, like the subway cards, which is a large section of the book, there was just a huge, huge wealth to cover. And the main thing I tried to do is to try and marry it a lot to the text that Dan supplied that was a little bit more of a historical context of what was going on in America to make sure that we covered the decades properly and what was going on, in the culture in America and during wartime and suburban life and all that stuff, so that we kind of had a good overview of visually of what Otis had achieved.
It's interesting what I like when you're writing about Otis, and when the first poster he designed for Mr. Wrigley, and Mr. Wrigley said, "I don't like it." And
right.
He said, "I don't care. Are you selling chewing gum, or are you going to hang this in your parlor?"
That rang so true, and almost, any designer that will always, have an internal thought like that. But that's incredibly brave to say something like that to a client, particularly a very, very important one. And I think it was that type of nerve that Otis had was the thing that endeared him so much to Mr. Wrigley, so that he could trust him that he would always speak his mind and he wasn't just trying to, be a yes man, which he had, a lot of at the company. And that's the thing that he came to admire so much in Otis, that he would be so frank, but that also Otis was very, very, he felt it very, very important to study statistics and success rates. And that was just like a nascent field at that time, but he would only judge the success of posters on whether they actually increased sales of gum, not whether the colors were nice or that it was like an aesthetic change. So that way they both, were very similar as far as just making sure that they were doing the right job for the product.
It's interesting when you see these placards, you see these billboards, it brings a message to you. And even today, and I remember, when I was a kid and you see a certain ad for a cereal, you see a cereal box, immediately that jingle comes to you. And of course, back then, they would hear the commercial on the radio. But the way these advertisements, billboards are designed, it's like they speak out to you and say, look, you got to have this gum.
Yeah, compared to the other books I've done other books on popular art, but this one takes very little explanation, and I'm also really impressed by how well people are receiving this when they see it. People just see it and like it, and they understand it, so this has a real beautiful immediate appeal to his work that's very dynamic, but again, has a lot of warmth to it, which, unlike a lot of work maybe coming from Europe at the time or more modernist design, would be very interesting, but sometimes a bit cold. And I don't think, Otis didn't mind having, either a sense of humor or warmth or, even family themes in the work, but still managed to make everything look very, very fresh and exciting.
We're speaking with Norman Hathaway. Norman is one of the co-authors of Dorothy and Otis, Designing the American Dream. Norman, one of the things that we want to talk about, the fact that Otis was a fantastic artist ever since he was a kid. There's a picture in there that you have of what it looks like Lawrence of Arabia, and he's 8 years old when he does that.
Yes, I find that very depressing as a drawer myself. I mean, not only is it a beautiful drawing, but that's a very, very sophisticated painting. And at 8 years old, you can just tell he must have, he just popped out with a gift, and there's no question about that. I've never seen him do a bad drawing, and even things like we have some ephemera of like little, cocktail napkins and things that he draws on. He's just a beautiful, beautiful draftsman. So, yeah, he was able to apply it to everything. I think it's an interesting thing that, the work that he did for Wrigley's and stuff is very, I wouldn't call it simple, but it's very reduced and geometric. And so he was trying to come up with a style that was able to communicate ideas very, very quickly without having overly complex drawing and rendering, even though he's more than capable of doing that. So, yeah, he's just a great drawer and colorist. Brilliant.
The artist is aiming sometimes, and you yourself as an artist know, that when you're drawing something, sometimes you may be targeting a specific audience. With the Wrigley's ads, it seems like they're targeted at everyone, whether you're a worker, you're a housewife, you're a student. You need this gum.
I mean, I can't remember the specific slogan since I have, no memory. But he did say something that basically he felt that anyone that worked in advertising had an obligation to the people's time that they took to look at some of their work. So if they were going to be giving it a message, it had to have something of value, not just something that was trying to be clever or sneakily trying to sell something to somebody. So integrity was a big part of it with him. And I think that rings true where you don't see a lot of stuff that's kind of fake or that looks slipshod. And, it's impressive that you can look at work that's, nearing on now, 80 years old and still is super, super strong.
We're speaking with Norman Hathaway. He is the co-author of the book Dorothea Notice, Designing the American Dream. And Dorothea Notice Shepherd designed many billboards, many subway placards, many things, especially, though, with Wrigley's and Wrigley's gum. And, of course, a lot of people, in fact, some people, Norman, have reviewed this book and talked about it as a baseball book. And I guess it's because of the Cubs thing. You want to tell us a little bit about how he got involved with the Cubs?
Sure. I mean, that's pretty straightforward and simple. Philip Wrigley was the head of Wrigley Gum and the main person that Otis worked for. But the company had been started by William Wrigley. And William Wrigley, in some ways, owned the Chicago Cubs baseball team, but also had a share in the Catalina Islands and ended up buying that completely as well. And once William Wrigley passed away, Philip really put his signature on both of these, properties. And the first thing he did was to take Shep out to Catalina Island to work on redesigning the island and sprucing it up. And he also brought the Chicago Cubs spring training out there. So Otis became quite close with a lot of the baseball players and socialized with them, also with the coach of the team. And that carried on when Otis went back to Chicago and they had him ask him to do the scorecard covers, which he did his entire career when he was there. So I think over 35 years of doing scorecards. But he was also involved with basically every aspect. He redesigned the uniforms 2 to 3 times, the baseball caps, the insignia, the outfield bleachers, the press room, really just, business cards for talent scouts, just every single thing. He was on the board of the Cubs for decades and was highly admired within the baseball league as, being like the number one designer and illustrator for the field. They had him do their National League anniversary insignia and lots of work outside of just the Cubs. So he was, in my view, he's the best baseball artist ever. And I definitely say that in a non-biased way. I think he's really done some great work. And it's nice when you look at a lot of the illustrations for scorecards, you can tell it's someone that really understands the sports because he does a beautiful job. If you look at the poses of all the different players, he could really understand the game and isn't just, making a pretty picture.
We're visiting with Norman Hathaway. Norman is the co-author of the book Dorothy and Otis, Designing the American Dream. It shows about the work and a little bit of the history of Otis and Dorothy Shepherd. One of the things we haven't really talked about, or one of the people actually, Dorothy's contribution to all of this, because when they met, they were very different, as we talked about earlier, but they ended up getting married and then going through, Depression era America, World War One, and then into World War II. Tell us a little bit about what role Dorothy played in all of this.
To me, that was the most fulfilling part of working on the book. As I've been an admirer of Otis's work since I was, 17, so, decades ago. And sometimes when I have a little obsession about a specific designer, I put things like online, on a Flickr group, to just have the images together so they can gestate and I can think about it. And one day someone commented on an image up there saying that I hadn't credited it properly. It was actually done by Dorothy Shepherd. And I thought, well, first of all, I'm shocked that anyone knows who Otis Shepherd is. And secondly, I have no idea who Dorothy was. So I asked them how they knew that. And she goes, oh, well, I'm the granddaughter. So I let out a little girl scream and said, oh, please contact me immediately. And it put me in touch, and she told me the whole story. And I didn't realize that, Dorothy had been around and had done so much work. And all the pieces that she'd done, she was like a very, very successful designer and extremely talented. And not only that, doing that in a field where there is really no women doing it at all. And I've checked with other historians, and by far there's no question she's the first important female designer in America. and, you know, in many ways you could argue in the world. So she, her contribution is fantastic. I would say that a lot of it has to, the reason that she's maybe a little bit less well known is, you know, that's a very, very strong shadow to be working in when you're working with Otis. And at the same time, she retired a bit earlier from work than he did. So the thing, the fields that she worked in is for particularly working in billboards is very ephemeral and rarely credited. So even now, if you go and try and research, you know, who did what billboard, it's almost impossible to find out who drew them. You can only really search them by the client. And so in that way, she's kind of been neglected, but hopefully this book will help, you know, bring back a little bit more spotlight on her, because she's absolutely equally talented as Otis.
We are visiting with Norman Hathaway. Norman is the co-author of the book, Dorothy and Otis, Designing the American Dream, The Pioneering Designers of Baseball, Billboards, and Chewing Gum. And it's a great book. It's filled with 330 four-color images. You go back, it's nostalgia, it's memories, it's you're thinking about all these billboards that you may have seen as a child, or even the Doublemint twins, as Norman mentioned a little while ago. Now, when you're talking about, about some of these pictures that you chose, and you said that you had a call from the granddaughter, Dorothy's granddaughter,
right.
Did that open up the doors for even more information and perhaps some of the pictures that you were able to put in here?
Yes, because if you go back like 5 years ago, if you would go onto Google and type in Otis Shepherd, you'd literally only get maybe three or four answers, and it would be like a Chicago Cubs scorecard and two images that were in the Library of Congress for Wrigley's, and that was it. And there's no way to find out when he was born or anything about his career, and it used to drive me insane. And I asked a lot of people about him, and some older Airbrush illustrators definitely go, oh, of course we know who he is, but no one really knew any background about him whatsoever. So to actually be, I mean, when I finally spoke to Erin, the granddaughter, she lives in Paris, but I spoke to her on the phone for about 15 minutes or so, and she gave me a lot more information. But she said, you know, you really need to talk to my father. So I didn't know their son was still alive, so he's in his 70s and living in Arizona. So I was then able to go and speak to him on the telephone. We must have spoken for a few hours, and he gave me so much information. And that's definitely the thing that germinated the seed to see whether this could actually be a book project. And when I contacted Dan as well, and I showed him some of the samples of the work, and he thought that was definitely something worth investigating. So before we even had a book deal, we traveled to Arizona to go and see, you know, what material they had and see what it was worthwhile. And I got a bit nervous in the car on the way there, because I didn't actually ask how much material they had. And I thought, oh no, if I drag down here without finding that out, and they just have a few pieces, he's going to kill me. But we walked into their Kirk's home, and there was a giant dining room table just heaped with scrapbooks and print materials and negatives, and, you know, probably the best design archive I've seen in my entire life. And just within 5 minutes, you know, Dan and I were just kind of staring at each other across the table like, you know, in disbelief. So we knew we had something that we could work with. And we came back to New York and put together a prototype and sold it right away. So, and then it was basically just the process of having to put it all together. But yeah, that's how it came about.
We're speaking with Norman Hathaway. He is the co-author of Dorothy and Otis, Designing the American Dream. It's a coffee book table filled with 330 four-color images and some history about Dorothy and Otis Shepherd. And, of course, a lot of people remember them from the Wrigley's Spearmint Gum, Wrigley's Juicy Fruit, Wrigley's Double Mint, and the Double Mint Twins, and also the Chicago Cubs. We're talking about gum, Norman, and one of the ads here, it caught me by surprise. It's like, well, because it really sticks out. And it says, Wrigley's Aero Mint Chewing Gum, Middle East. Do you know anything about that?
We don't. That was just the day we were leaving. Kirk Shepherd went back to his warehouse space and came back with two posters. And I have a feeling that's just a series of posters that were done in the style of a travel posters showing the different countries where the gum was available. But that's all that I know.
It's very interesting. What about pellet gum? What is that?
Pellet gum is just similar to a large, like a chiclet,
okay,
as opposed to a stick gum. So you can put it in a small piece, and you don't have to unwrap it. You can kind of pop it out with one hand into your mouth.
As we mentioned earlier, we talked about the different demographics, the target audiences that they were trying to reach. And as I'm looking at one of the pages here, it has different seasons here. For one, you see the couple and they're water skiing, and it says, for a refreshing change. And then when they're having the snowball fight, you'll say, it's fun to chew. And this is really fun.
In some ways, like trying to appeal, like when it's the summer, you want something kind of minty to cool you down and the other to give you energy. So, yeah, they're kind of working all the different points of, you know, to increase the appeal of gum at the different times of the year. Yeah, I'm glad you noticed that. I thought that was fun, too.
We're speaking with Norman Hathaway. He is the co-author of Dorothy and Otis, Designing the American Dream, the pioneer designers of baseball, billboards, and chewing gum. At the beginning of the book, you start a little bit with some historical facts, and we mentioned already the picture that was drawn by 8-year-old Otis. But later on, when he was serving in the war, he drew pictures of some of his comrades, and they're excellent.
Yeah, that was just in a pile on Kirk's table. That sketchbook, the stunning thing about it is only about 3.5 inches tall. They're very, very small, and obviously it looks like they're just drawn by the candlelight or around a campfire, but I think Otis must have been like around 19 or 20 when he drew those, and that's when I just realized what a draftsman he was, because he had no formal art training, you know, whatsoever, but those are very, very sophisticated, you know, drawings just done with pen and ink and smushing his finger on them. But, yeah, I love those portraits. Those are beautiful.
When he started out, as you mentioned, he didn't have any formal art training, but yet he was incredible. And I'm sure that how many other artists in the business have taken after him? Obviously, you are a fan of his ever since you were young, 17.
Sure. The other book I did was actually on a lot of airbrush artists from California in the 1970s, and every one of them, you know, hugely admired Otis and thought his work was very strong. Otis was very inspired by a lot of European poster artists and traveled to Europe to, you know, meet with them and see what they were up to. And if you look historically, back particularly in the 1930s, there weren't very many graphic designers or illustrators that were that popular outside of America. But Otis is highly rated by other Europeans and was published in books and design journals. And so he's a very, very highly regarded illustrator during this time, no question. But it's very, very rare to have someone from America regarded that highly at that time.
You mentioned Catalina Island earlier, and I see some pictures here, actually some sketches, and they are one of Helen Wrigley, one of Jack White, and they're very interesting. They're, I guess, just pencil drawings, maybe, or charcoal?
Yeah, I love those drawings. There's a few other pieces. No, those are just like regular. This looks like they're done with a number 2 pencil on a regular pad. But both he and Dorothy were excellent at doing drawings without any pre-sketching, and those drawings almost look like like someone would have sketched it first and then gone over them with a very careful line. But those are just drawn, you know, right off the cuff that way. And there's a few other drawings that we found since the book came out as well that Dorothy's done of her parents that we put on the website for the book if people are interested to look. But there's a lot of very, very nice drawings throughout the book of that Dorothy drew of Otis when he's working at the billboard company. They're done in that same style, just very fluid line work. Really, really great.
And one of the things actually, the last picture in the book is, I guess, one of his pens or airbrushes in the case?
Yes, yes.
Tell us about
this. Well, that was shocking. Towards the end of the trip, we had pretty much done most of the research and got most of the materials together, and we were getting ready to go, and Otis's son had Otis's drawing table that he used to build miniature models on, and he said, I've got something for you, go. And he went out and handed me this case, and I thought, because I could tell since I used to use airbrushes that I thought it was an airbrush, and I opened it up and it was Otis's airbrush from the 1930s, and I said, this is great, I want to take a picture of this so I can, you know, have it. And he goes, no, you take it. So he gave it to me as a gift, but that's a beautiful little piece. There's 2 airbrushes and a little tin that we have with some of his old art supplies on it, but that's the air gun that he used to create most of his illustration. And so I just thought that was a nice bit to show his tools at the end of the book.
That is very interesting. We are visiting with Norman Hathaway. Norman is the co-author of the book, Dorothy and Otis, Designing the American Dream, the Pioneering Designers of Baseball, Billboards, and Chewing Gum. Getting back to Catalina Island, there are some ads, I guess.
Right.
Is that promoting the tourism, or what is that?
Catalina was a huge resort at the time. Philip Wrigley really changed the island and invested a lot of money into improving it. And that was a very, very popular resort with most movie stars. If you wanted to get outside of Los Angeles and have a bit of a break, that's where everyone went. So they could go and kick back and have a few drinks and see big bands and things like that. So they used to come to the island, and Kirk was emceed a lot of the events and palled around with a lot of movie stars, Johnny Weissmuller, who played Tarzan, and Stan Laurel and Oliver Hardy are in there, and all kinds of people came and visited. And so there's lots of photos in the book of that time when Catalina was so popular. And I think that it died down pretty much because it was taken over as a military base during World War II. And by the time the war was over and air travel had just first started coming in, so people started traveling more to Puerto Rico and other places, and Catalina never really revived in the same way. But during that time, I mean, they really took over and, you know, redid all the signs and helped with some building structure, helped design ceramics, murals. Dorothy did interior design, uniform design. I mean, it was a complete top-to-bottom rebuild.
You just mentioned the World War and the Army taking over Catalina Island. The chewing gum industry and the Wrigley gum industry, they also lent their, I guess everybody was involved in, you know, supporting the war, the soldiers actually in the war. And some of these ads also say, while they're out there in the front, you can, you know, help by buying this gum.
Yeah, and they actually ended up halting sales of gum for a year and a half because most of their production, they went actually to send to GIs as opposed to selling it commercially. And they also helped stop using aluminum as wrappers so they could use that for building for, the war effort. And so they actually advertised and said, you know, don't forget about us. We're only shut down, you know, during the war and we'll be back. So, you know, that happened. But yeah, Philip Wrigley definitely contributed all the efforts to try and, you know, support troops and give them a little treat, too.
We have been visiting with Norman Hathaway. Norman is the co-author of the book, Dorothy and Otis, Designing the American Dream, the Pioneering Designers of Baseball, Billboards, and Chewing Gum. Norman, is there a webpage that people can go to where they can see pictures of this?
They sure can. It's just dorothyandotis.com. So we put up some new pictures every once in a while and adding some new information. There's also a Facebook page for the book as well.
We've been visiting with Norman Hathaway. He is the co-author, along with Dan Adell, of the Dorothy and Otis, Designing the American Dream, the Pioneering Designers of Baseball, Billboards, and Chewing Gum. Well, Norman, thank you very much for taking the time to be with us. Really enjoyed it.
Great. Thank you very much for having me. Pleasure.
Perspectives is taped and produced at the KTP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer, Norma Martinez. You've been tuned to Perspectives. I'm Luis Sainz.